Good morning, we're learning Shmuel Beis. We are in the middle of the 12th chapter. We're in Perek Yud Beis. In our packets that were on page 272, we're going to start again on Pasuk Zion, verse 7. The chapter began discussing a little story in which the prophet Nathan, or Natan, asked a question to the king, to David. And the question basically was that there was a person that did a terrible thing. He was a very wealthy individual, and obviously he had plenty of food to give to any guest that would happen to come to his house. And when a guest came by, instead of taking from all the different choices that he had, he had to take this one little thing that belonged to a very poor person. The only one little lamb, one animal that he had. And even to study the detail of this relationship that this poor person had, you can imagine he's poor, so every little thing that he had would be valuable. But he had a very special relationship with this one with this one lamb, in which he took care of, he purchased, and he nurtured, he even fed, you know, from table food, and slept in this, not in the barn, but next to him. And all of a sudden, he comes about, grabs this animal, steals it from him, slaughters it, and gives this meat to his guest. And the guest is so impressed. He says, "Wow, this is so delicious. You're so hospitable, you're so kind and generous." Of course, he wasn't kind and he wasn't generous. He was a thief, a crook, a criminal. So Nathan presented this question to David, to David HaMelech, and asked, "What should we do about such a person?" And he didn't even ask the question. He just cited the situation. And then the pasuk on the top of page 272, "Vayichar af David." David was so upset. He was so angry. How could a person do such a terrible thing? So insensitive. You have so much for yourself, and you have to take this one little thing that belongs to someone else. Let that person have a little bit of enjoyment in their life, and you can enjoy all the wealth and affluence that you have. He was so upset that he said two punishments this person should receive. And even though we mentioned a little bit last time that generally we don't give two punishments, we discussed how it was possible. And the two punishments were that this person should have to pay back the poor person fourfold, not just give back the value of the animal. I mean, you can imagine, it's not just an animal, right? This person, like a person's dog dies. It's like, "Oh, so go and buy another dog." It's not just that. It's like family's connected. So not only that, but he says a very strong language. He says, "Ki ben mavis ho'ish ho'oseh zot," which is the end of verse 5, that this person deserves to die. And we discuss, what do you mean? It's not a capital offense. If you steal, it's not a nice thing to do. So one of the answers we saw in Rashi was, practically speaking, if you steal something from a poor person who has nothing, you steal their last loaf of bread, in essence, you're like pulling a trigger, because that person is going to die of starvation. They probably wouldn't have taken their lamb, this animal, unless it was the last possible situation. Otherwise, they'd die of starvation. But nonetheless, deserves to die. And with that said, we saw the very first words of Pasuk Zion, which we're going to begin. "Vayomer Nasan el Dab." So Nasan, after citing the situation, the story to David, and David getting so upset someone could do such a thing, he says two words. And those two words are, "Atah ish." You are this person. This is just a little story, a mushal, some parable. And we saw the lengthy redak on the previous page, which showed the connection between this story, the mushal and the nimshal, of how David was this wealthy man who had everything. And this poor person was Uriah Hiti, that you justified and said he deserved to die. Maybe he was rebellious, more than Malchus. We cited a couple reasons why he might have rebelled against the king. But the reality is, you put him in the front lines so that you can take this one thing that he had, this one little thing, his wife, Bathsheba. And therefore, interesting, David, how you felt this person should, you're extremely angry at this person, which means you should be extremely angry at your actions. You felt this person should have to pay fourfold that which he stole, however that could be accomplished. And he also, the person deserves to die. Ki ben mavis ha'ish ha'osa zot. Those words that you said about that person, you were really speaking about yourself. Atah ha'ish, you are the person. Let's continue in this pasuk. Ko amar Hashem, Elkei Yisrael, so says God, Anochi mishachticha lamelech al Yisrael. Look at what we have done for you. We have anointed you. You are a king, the most powerful man in all the Jewish nation. Anochi hitzalticha miyad Shaul. And do you remember your past when you were running around all over the place in Shmuel Aleph? And that there was the first king wanted to kill you? And the only reason why you were spared, because logic would not possibly point to the direction that you should have been spared, it was Hashem. Hashem spared you. And this is your reaction. This is the way you behave. So, with this said, the idea is brought down in greater detail in Shar Tshuva, in a sefer which focuses a lot on Musa, which is not in our packet. But he says as follows, that the way that we judge others is the way that God judges us. He says, "In darko hayu we don oso makav schus." If we judge other people favorably, donim oso gam kein makav schus. Then also, God will judge our actions in that fashion. And of course, in the reverse, that if you look always at the negative, you always look at that person and find their flaws, then unfortunately also gam hamalke shores medabrim olav ra lamala. The angels, so to speak, will talk to God negatively about you as well. If you want to point out the flaws of someone, we can easily point out the flaws of you as well. And as the Mishnah Sot Zahav elaborates a little bit, he explains that he didn't really just listen to this entire case. Immediately he got upset. Vayicharaf David. The reality is, maybe this wealthy person had some legitimate reason for having stolen that animal. Who knows what it could have been? But the reality is that maybe there would be some rationalization. No, I'm immediately going to judge this person that he did something wrong. So it's the same thing by David. David had used every excuse in the book. He claimed that she was not really married retroactively, because after all, a divorce document was given to her by her husband before she went out to war. He deserved to die because of the way that he spoke to the king. All these things are also excuses and rationalizations. But the truth is that if you are so quick to judge another person, then that's exactly how Hashem will judge you. Will judge you in the exact same fashion. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why Nathan didn't just go about and immediately say that you did this thing wrong. But first he wanted to be able to give him an example to see how he would react to it. And since he reacted in a disfavorable manner, therefore that's how he will be judged exactly the same. So he had the opportunity to look at this case and to possibly reflect upon himself. And as he was hoping people would judge him favorably, he should have done the same. And since he didn't, unfortunately that's going to be his outcome, and he'll be punished for what he did. Okay, so that's Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Ches continues and tells us, V'et neluchas beis adonecha des neshe adonecha b'chekecha. Not only did I make you a king, not only did I save you from being killed by a previous king, but I gave you the house of your master, v'es neshe adonecha, the wives of your master, b'chekecha. V'et neluchas beis adonecha des neshe adonecha. Beis Yisrael v'Yehuda, and I gave to you this all Beis Yisrael as well as Yehuda. So we'll understand what does that mean that he actually married the wives of his predecessor, Shaul? Possibly. We'll see the Radak in a moment that gives two interpretations. V'im ma'at, and if this was not so much, v'osifu ha'kahena v'kahena, you could have had more like that which you have and like that which you have. Kahena v'kahena. And the way that that's interpreted, if we look in, let's see, the Masudas David, I believe, discusses this. The Masudas David says, "V'im at, v'im adayin hamshol hagadol ha'im at me'inach." Says Masudas David that if you would think that your position is still minimal, shol mimenu, ask v'yosifu ha'kehena v'kehena, I'll give you even more. Ratzalomer pa'amim kamo sheishloch. Two times more than that which you already have. All you have to do is ask. But to go and to take, that's wrong. You had no right to take. So you could have asked Hashem and said, you know, I just don't have enough. I would like 200% more than what I have, and that would be fine. Others interpret kehena ukehena is to refer to the amount of wives. And this is actually brought down in the English over here on the bottom of page 273. That David, excluding, according to many commentators, the concubines, the Torah tells us that one is not allowed to have too many wives. Now, some men would think that's one. But in halacha, when it comes to a king, it's 18. All right, a king is not allowed to have more than 18 wives. Now, that's only a restriction, by the way, to a king, someone who's not a king. So a concubine, according to many of the Mefarshim, say that's not part of the 18. That's not part of the 18. So, because that's the reason why they conclude, some conclude that, is because David had six wives, which were not the concubines, which... So, right, so he could have had, that's how they interpret from those words, another six and another six, but not more, 18, if you wished. And so you could have had 12 more wives. Instead, you have to take a married woman. That was wrong.
Does any of the Mefarshim bring up lo tachmod eshet recha? Lo tachmod?
That about being coveting jealous?
Right. It's one of the Ten Commandments.
So is lostinah. So is adultery. Adultery is also one of them.
He's a king and he can marry.
Right.
And adultery is not only adultery, he's chamad. He did Muhammad. There's no. I don't understand why they're trying to soften it when it's clearly what he did.
Well,
how he went about it makes it even
worse. But Muhammad. He rationalized. He justified. He didn't really do anything wrong. He, by the book.
Muhammad. So why don't they? Why is that word not mentioned?
What other thing? He lusted after. He
coveted.
Coveted.
Right. You're right. It's true. He apparently.
This is the bottom one.
Yeah.
But he was punished, so he.
Yeah, I mean he.
And how many kids did he lose?
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna see in this parak, possibly. Well, we're gonna see at least in this chapter, at least maybe one is gonna die. We'll have to see if he's able to daven and. We'll have to see. But obviously he made a mistake. He made a mistake. That we have to say. Well, that's obviously he's being punished. We're going to see, and we're going to see if he owns up to this mistake, or if he rationalizes, or he acknowledges his mistake. That we'll have to see later on, a few psukim from now. Fine. So some also explain that the reason, why does it have to say this, the imat dosifalcha kahena the kahena, that he could have had another more wives, is because it's important, certainly when it comes to chinuch, that we don't just tell someone asks a question, am I allowed to do X? Right? So the answer is, straight in Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to. So I could just easily answer, no, you're not allowed to do it, and then walk away. And I have answered that person's question. But I'm really not answering that person's question because I'm not giving that person other options, other ways to do something. So instead of me saying it's forbidden, I could say, you know, this way of doing it, you're not supposed to. However, there are other things which are permissible, which you can get around and perhaps reach the same outcome and goal in a different way. And that's how some of Parshim explain that it's not just that they were going to say, you're not allowed to think Bat Sheva, but it's saying that, you know, there are other things you could have done. The Torah is not about restrictions. The Torah has specific guidelines and parameters, certain things you can't do, but there are other things you can. And therefore, that's perhaps why they mention this at this point. Pasuk Tes. Madua, so now he asks the question, why? Madua bozisas devar Hashem. Why did you embarrass, disgrace the words of Hashem? L'asos hara be'enai. That you did something bad, be'enai is translated in my eyes. Be'enai is really not be'enai is in my eye. Be'enav. Be'enav and be'enai is eye or eyes, which is interesting. The way it's written and the way it's read is different. What's the difference? One eye and two eyes. Maybe we'll get back to that in a moment. So what did he do that was so bad in his eyes? Es uriachiti hikisa b'cheref. Uriachiti, David, you picked up a sword and you killed him. You actually took a sword, David, apparently that's what the Pasuk says, which we know is not true. He was actually killed in battle, but he said you killed him by a sword. Maybe he was ordered to do so, so it's as though he did it. V'esishto l'kachto l'chol isha, and then you took his wife as your own wife, you took Bat Sheva. And then for some reason the Pasuk again says the exact same thing. V'osa harata b'cherev b'nei Amon. And again, he was killed, you had him killed by the sword of B'nei Amon. So we already know that he died. Forget about the storyline, but the Pasuk just said the exact same sentence, says two times that he was killed. You can only kill someone once. So why does it say this Pasuk that he killed Erechiti with a sword? Then at the end of the verse, he also harata b'cherev b'nei Amon. What's going on over here? So there's a couple of interpretations. One interpretation is that it's one thing that if he had him killed because he was more of a malchus, because he rebelled. Okay. So if he killed him because Uriachiti rebelled, no one would have been able to put two pieces together. But now, this is how some people interpret this line of reasoning, once they saw that you took his wife, then it was self-understood that you were the one that had him killed. It wasn't that he was just killed in battle, and it wasn't that necessarily he even deserved to die because he rebelled against the king. By your actions of as ishto lokachto chalisha, that you took this wife, immediately afterwards, it was clear what your intentions were all along. So that's how some interpret it. The Radak gives another interesting way of interpreting this. Apparently, there are worse ways of dying. If you look in the Radak, that which is actually not underlined. Well, the first four it says hikisa b'cherev ki'ilu ata hikato. It's as though you're the one that killed him. Kivon sivisa es Yoav l'sumu makum hasakana. Since you told your general, you told Yoav that he should be placed in a makum sakana, in a very dangerous place, which is right up against the walls, without anyone else around, even though people actually did join Uriachiti, and those people also died because they were loyal to Uriachiti as he was to his fellow soldiers. So since you gave that command, it's as though you did it. So you're a king. So whatever you say, you don't actually have to get your hands bloody. The fact that you say and tell someone to do it, it's as though you yourself killed him. And the Radak is going to pick up on that in a moment, but let's now see the next Radak, Osa Harata B'cherev B'nei Amon, this is the part which is not underlined, but it addresses the question of why it says that he was killed two times in the same sentence. So the Radak says, Acher She'amar Hikisa B'cherev. After it already says that he was killed, that you killed him by the sword, The Radak asks the question straight out. Lama Omar, why does it immediately afterwards say, in the same sentence, Osa Harata Becher B'nei Amon? Why does it again say that he was killed, that you had him killed by the sword of B'nei Amon, which were the people that the Jewish people were fighting at the time? So the Radak points out, as we said, that they're different ways of dying. Ratzel Omer, Shtei Ra'osa Sisa B'misa. So you did two bad things in killing him. The first point is that you had him killed. But the second thing is Shahar Gaso Becherem B'nei Amon, that not only did he die, but he did not die a soldier's death, or you know, an honorable death, I should say, but rather he had to die in the hands of his enemies. Kolomar Shahafalto Biyad Sone Yisrael, that he had to die in this most undignified manner in the battlefield with his body, his remains lying in the battlefield. When instead he could have died a more dignified death in the palace. So that it's not all, so that's how the Radak interprets it. It's not only, on one hand, it's glorifying that a person can die in battle as a soldier, but it's a very gruesome death, as you can imagine. It's not just a person walks on the battlefield and you get killed. Unfortunately, it could be a very long process, a very painful death, as opposed to immediate beheading in the palace, which would have been a much quicker, less painful death. That's the first part of the Radak that we just saw.
I think that he did what Cain did.
What was that?
He killed his brother. Mm-hmm. And then he said, Hashem Elohim. He caused the death, but he made it seem like it's not his brother. He wasn't there. He was not involved. Except Hashem was there.
Right. When it came to Cain actually did physically kill his brother. But you're right, he denied.
He, by words, killed him. He had him killed. It's the same thing. But he's hiding.
Right.
He's hiding under a cloth that you can't hide under.
Right. That's right.
You're speaking to a sheep.
Absolutely. That's so, right.
That's the same thing.
Absolutely. You're right. Oh, that so that we're gonna have to see. At least when Cain was asked, he immediately denied it, or he said, "I don't know." Right. But we'll see that when during this whole, this is really a monologue, how David's gonna respond. Is he gonna also deny it, rationalize? That we'll see. Maybe he will be similar to Cain, or maybe he will admit that he sinned. That we'll see shortly. Let's see this Radak that asks a very fundamental question. The Radak asks a question as follows. He says, quoting the words of the Rizal, or Moseinu Zechonu Avracha, or rabbis of blessed memory, quoting the Talmud in Kedushin, Afal Gav, the Bechol HaTorah Kula, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. When it comes to all laws, all situations, there's a principle, Ein Shleach L'Dvar Aveira. Now, if I want, I can do a mitzvah of Shalach Manos, right? And I can give you on Purim a nice little basket, right, with some fruits and vegetables, exactly what you like. Or I can ask you to give this gift, which I bought, to my friend, right? And you'll be my agent. You'll be my shliach, and you'll have done this on my behalf. So, you are a shliach, you are my agent, and I appreciate that you did that, and that works. And I get the credit for having performed the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. You don't get the credit for having done the mitzvah, you are the middleman, so to speak, but I get the schar, I get the reward for doing that mitzvah. How about when it comes to an aveira? I tell you, I say, you know, instead of giving Shalach Manos on Purim, why don't you go and kill that person for me? Could you steal that book for me over there? Now you'll steal it for me because I really would like that book. So maybe you could say that if you steal it, maybe I'll be the one, because I told you to do it, I'll be responsible. No, Ein Shliach with the Varveira. When it comes to a sin, there is no laws of a principal and an agent. So the fact is that you chose to steal that, You shouldn't have done it. So what? I told you to do it? So the Talmud says the expression, Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishom. If you have a student and a teacher, so which, if you're a student yourself, who are you going to listen to? When you turn to the student that says, no, there's no test tomorrow, and the teacher's right up there saying, yes, there is a test, you probably want to listen to the teacher. The teacher knows best. So too, when it comes to Hashem, Hashem tells us, you're not allowed to steal. I tell you, hey, go ahead and steal that. So who are you supposed to listen to? Me? Of course not. You're supposed to listen to the teacher, to God. So this is a question. So what's the question? The question is that the Pasuk clearly over here tells us that David didn't kill the guy. David asked Yoav to do it for him. He didn't actually kill him either. He put him in the front lines. But David did not pull a trigger. He did not pull out his sword. Didn't touch the guy. Never let it, not a finger on the person. So, based on the principle, this we're in the middle of this Radak, Ein Shliach LeDavar Aveira, how could we say that David is responsible for Uriachiti's death? Not only responsible, but looking at the sentence that we just read, it says, V'osa harata, you killed him. What do you mean? I didn't kill him. David could say, Ein shleach l'dvar aveira. I told them to go kill Uriachiti, but they know that you're not allowed to murder someone, so it's not my fault. They weren't supposed to listen to me.
Do they both have the Avera then? Does the Shaliach Avera
That's
the Avera also?
When it's Ein Shaliach Devar Avera, you shouldn't have done it. Don't listen to me.
So that's
murder may be different. That's what we're going to see.
And then as a king,
we're going to see them in the Radak. But you shouldn't have killed them. Don't listen to me. If I tell you to go out and commit a crime, you're not supposed to commit a crime. Oh, he told me to do it. What do you mean he told me to do it?
He was the king.
God's going to answer that.
Did Uriah know that he was sleeping with
Bathsheba? That's questionable.
No. That's questionable?
By the sentences, let's say he did not know. Let's say no one knew.
So if the king says, take pick at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
right.
and let them be the first one because they're so brave, is Uriah supposed to know? Not Uriah,
Yeah, Yoav.
Yoav.
Right.
This is what the king means.
That's another good point. Well, let's see what the Radak addresses.
Yes. It's an important principle of interpretation for criminal law, I would say.
Go ahead.
Stops here, this kind of thing.
Yes.
Think about it. You know, all these Nazi war crimes. I mean, who's responsible?
That's
you
right.
You did it. You lifted your hand. I don't care who told you to do it. You did it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it is sort of a precedent, and, you know,
That's another good point. Let's see this Radak, and let's see if we can go back to that idea and see if it's related. Okay? So the Radak again says as follows, that Afal Gav de Bechol HaTorah Kula, throughout the entire Torah there's a principle of Ein Shliach Devar Avera. The fact that you did a crime, you can't say, oh, well, Rabbi Tomsky told me to break the law. It's like, who's he? Like, what are you talking about? He probably shouldn't have told you to do it, but I'm not going to get in trouble for it. You're the one who's going to be arrested, not me. Kibikol makom, says the Radak, in all places, ha-shaleach patur, ha-shaleach chayim, maybe b'dinei shamayim, maybe Hashem will hold you somewhat accountable, but the principal, the one who tells you to do it, is not going to be responsible. The one who does the action is the one who's responsible. You did it. You didn't have to do it. Don't listen to me. So why do we say when it comes to murder, when David had this man murdered, Hachashani, here it's different. And there could be a couple of reasons why it's different. So one reason, says the Radak, Shakosim Karu Hareg, that he's called a murderer, Shem of Osa Harata, that you, David, you're the one that killed him. But Tom, the reason, Lefi Shahayim Melech, this is not just a regular guy, it's not just some guy in the street says, go kill. He was a king. Ve'ein over al mitzvaso ki'ilu hu hargo. So, in the event that a king tells you to do something, perhaps especially if you don't even know that you're doing anything wrong, you have to listen. And even maybe he didn't know, Yoav didn't know, no one really knew what was going on over here at this point. It was all hidden and covered up. So, the reality is, a king tells me to do something, even if I don't necessarily agree with what he has to say, it's not up to me to make those decisions. I can't question a king. And if I start questioning a king,
then you're more in Hamal.
I'll be more in Hamal, because I'll be killed. I'm not going to put my own life on the line. I have no choice. I have to listen to what the king says. The Chaim Shaul, we also find this by his predecessor, the first king, Chetziv Harog Nov Ir HaKohanim. That Nov, the city which was filled with great Kohanim, so Doag Vadomi was the one who actually killed him. But the reality is, it was the king who ordered them to be killed. So they were Ki'ilu Hu Hargom. Shaul was held accountable for the death of that city of Nov, because he gave that order. Now, Afal Gav, She'enu Adam Lasos Mitzvahs Melech B'zeh Inyan. You're really not supposed to listen to even a king. If a king tells you to do something which you know is absolutely wrong, and the king is 100% wrong, you're not really supposed to listen to them. But Kiyotzebo, something similar, like Kamo Shekasamu Amalo, as it says above, the Pasuk tells us, Kol Ish Asher Yamr Es Picha Yumas. Anyone who rebels against, goes against his words, will be killed. Yafal Fil Devar Avera. You would think maybe if you don't listen to a king who tells you to do something wrong, Tumulim or Rak. The Pasuk says, Rak, which excludes a sin, which means you do not have to listen, and you shouldn't listen to a king who tells you to do a crime. Afal Pikein, Enko Adam Nishar Bezeh, Yodel Lidrosh Achin Varakin, Lefikach Onish Al Hamelach. Not everyone knows this idea, and therefore, they listen to whatever the king said. They don't know that there's sometimes I should listen to a king, sometimes I shouldn't listen to a king. I know I have to listen to a king. And I'm just accepting orders. So if I'm just accepting the orders, what do you expect from me? Now, maybe I'm not supposed to. The Pasuk says you're not supposed to listen to those orders. But nonetheless, the king is held accountable for having given
the order.
Because you cannot expect someone who always has to listen to you, or almost always has to listen to you, to make that judgment call not to listen to you at this one particular time. And therefore, that's how the Radak explains why David himself is responsible. At least, he's also responsible. It doesn't talk about if he's the only one, and we're specifically speaking about him. Maybe someone else is also held accountable as well. So you're going back to the case of the Shoah, right? Mm-hmm. So some people were ordered to do terrible crimes of genocide. And what was their justification is? Just following orders.
But if you know that this is against God. No. If you know that it's against God, it's one of the. Then you are held responsible.
Exactly.
By Melech Malcham Lachim, not just by Melech. And here, it's Melech Malcham Lachim talking to the Melech. So the Melech has absolutely no excuse against Melech Malcham Lachim. He can do it to men, but not to Hashem. There's no. It doesn't go. It doesn't hold.
So was that a valid excuse by some when they said I was just accepting orders, that's why I killed all them? Or they're also held accountable, right? They were held accountable, right?
Well, part of it was that they enrolled voluntarily into the SS or whatever. I don't think they forced everyone. They could have gone to the front, they could have done other things, but they
wanted to participate.
That was a personal choice. It was personal choice. But here, if you tell a soldier, don't go to war and don't kill, it's a soldier who get, well, that's his job, going out to war and kill.
Okay. So,
my son said something about Uriah. He says he was a mercenary, because he wasn't Israeli, he was a Hiti.
There's one interpretation that, there's a couple interpretations. Either it's possible that, also, it's possible he was a Jew that came from from Chais, or that he was a convert.
Yeah.
So there's the other interpretations.
I don't know which place that was.
Okay.
What about Doeg Vadomi? Was he from Edom?
Some explain
that
that's another, because he was someone that wanted to kill David, who was Edom, or he came from that place, that different interpretations. But or he was a person who, he was a killer. He was a
he knew
you know,
he was killing
fighter.
Kohanim. Right. He knew he was killing Kohanim.
Right.
And Shaul knew he wanted Kohanim to die. So this is
but Shaul also justified it because he felt that they were being more b'malchus by whole,
and,
keeping
and,
David
and where was
giving
Shaul?
Him.
What happened to Shaul?
He
that's the answer.
He was punished. He was held accountable for that.
You can't give these excuses.
Right. Right. That's the Radaka saying, that even though you didn't do it, you can't give those orders. Okay. So, just very, very briefly, Be'eino, Be'einai, the commentators do focus on the idea of two eyes versus one eye, and there's numerous ways to answer this. One way we spoke about a few, like a couple months ago, about when you look at someone, you could look at someone with your two eyes, the whole picture, looking at the good and the bad. Perhaps David, as we saw, the way he judged, so quick to judge, he was quick to look at the faults, which is using the one eye, the negativity. Some also interpret be'enai, the one eye, is that we shouldn't look at him that he was ra be'enav, in both eyes. He was completely bad. But rather, it was only one eye, that there were certain aspects that were not completely bad. It wasn't, you can't just paint this picture that he was just, he did an outright sin, he was a murderer, he was committed adultery. We can't say those things. He did something wrong, but it was be'enai, with one eye. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Yud. V'yatah now l'sosur cher meveisecha ad olam. The sword will never be removed from your house. Ekev ki b'zisani v'tikach es eshes u'reachiti li'os l'chal isha. Because you did this act, this terrible, embarrassing thing, that you took u'reachiti as a wife. And therefore, because of this, you're always going to be threatened potentially to die by the sword. Okay, let's just see a couple more psukim, and then we'll have to stop. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ko Amar Hashem, Hine Mekim Elecha Ra Beveitecha. There will be something evil that will come forth from your house, which apparently means that it's not going to be that you're going to be threatened by the sword by your enemies, but maybe someone in your own home is going to be a threat to you, which we'll see who that is in a moment. They're going to take your wives in front of you. And also he'll give them to your fellow men, as it's translated here. And he will lie down with them in full daylight, in front of the sun. See one more pasuk. Since you did this act in a hidden manner, all this is going to be completely revealed, out, and it'll be completely out in the open. In fact, this is a Mishnah in Perkei Avos. The fourth chapter tells us that kol hamachalel shem shemayim b'saser, anyone who violates and disgraces God's name in private, nifroim imenu begoloi, it's going to be that you'll be paid back, punished, open. So the fact that David tried to constantly hide all of this, all of this, you can't hide, right? So everything will be ultimately revealed. And not only that, but you're going to be constantly threatened by not an outsider, but someone from your own home, namely Avshalom. So Avshalom is going to be a threat to your throne. He's going to take your wives, and it's going to be done out in the open. So the Radak asks a question, in which we'll leave with this question, which we're not going to answer, but it's a very valid question. The question is, yes, the question is Bechira. And we spoke about it a little bit a couple weeks ago, and in fact, for Perkei Avos, the Shabbos, it's all about the question of Bechira and Yediyah. That how is it possible that we have free will if in fact God knows what is going to happen? We know God knows what we're going to do, so does that take away from my free will? If God knows I'm going to sin, so that's not really Bechira. I don't really have free will at all. And therefore the Radak asks the question, which we'll see next week, it's a lengthy Radak, of how is it possible that Hashem is telling him right now that you're going to have a child who, by the way, is, you know, who knows who this person is. He doesn't mention who he is. But you're going to have someone in your house that is going to commit all of these crimes and do all of these sins. So the Radak is going to ask a simple question. What do you mean? Don't we have this principle of a kol b'dishamayim, chutz mirashamayim, that I have the choice, if I want to be a tzaddik, I can be good. If I want to go out and do terrible things, I can do that too. It's up to me. So how could Hashem tell him that there's going to be a child that is going to be sinful? What do you mean? Doesn't that take away from this person's free will, this person's bechira? So that's a question that we're going to have to see next week. And ultimately, that will be the last of Nathan's words. And then, fortunately, David is going to end off, as we'll start off next week, Chatasi L'Hashem. That in fact I realize the error of my ways. I realize that I made a mistake. And that's something which we'll be touching upon. Contrasting it with Cain, with how he may not have said Chatasi L'Hashem. Rather, he was trying to pass the buck, as we said. All that we'll see next week. We'll stop here.